Hello and welcome to the Negative Process Podcast, episode 399. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from a chilly Gutterman cave here in Louisville, Kentucky. And it is a listener interaction show. I know we missed last week. The holiday season is upon us, so we're going to be a little bit more sporadic about when shows come out, because it's gonna, you know, people got to visit families and all sorts of holiday festivities. So, and I think Andre was actually out of town anyway. So, but anyway, it's we had to skip last week, and our schedule will be a little weird. I'm not sure the next episode will be the big 400th episode, and I'm not really sure when we're going to have that out, because I'm trying to schedule a time when all of the gang can be here for that. Even maybe trying to get Mrs. Roxanna Engels and Miss Jess Jones on here as well, if we can convince them to come back for one episode. But right now, tonight, we just have the Gruesome Twosome and the OGs, some might call us, the original gangsters or the original Guttermans. I don't know whichever one you want to say is OG stands for, but it's just Andre and I tonight. And we're going to have Kooks on, but I got to admit, I did something to my back, and I don't know when it happened. I believe it would have been at Ford at some point. That seems to make the most sense. Factory work is a rough thing. And I pulled some kind of muscle in my back. And I like to say, Andre made a comment before we started recording here that I have so many muscles, it's no wonder I pulled one. And it is. I quickly corrected him and said, yes, I do have a lot of muscles, pizza muscles. And a lot of pizza muscles going on. So, but I pulled one of them. I pulled a pizza muscle. And it hurts. It hurts really bad. And I've been laying around all day, all evening. And then I end up like soaking in a hot bathtub just to try to loosen it up enough to get out here and bring this show to the people. But unfortunately, all this me trying to be a doctor to myself got kind of past Kook's bedtime. So we are without the Mr. Kukovica, the drunk dark room. We're out of we don't have him tonight, but I do have all the way in the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California, La La Land, Mr. Andre Dominguez. How are you doing tonight, Andre?
I am doing well, Mike. I'm here under several layers of blankets in bed, trying to stay warm because I refuse to turn on my shitty old gas-powered radiator.
So I can't expect you to fall asleep at some point soon, right?
Oh, no, no.
Well, that would never happen, right?
No, of course not. How unprofessional. What kind of co-host do you take me for?
Yeah, that's true. One thing I will say is for the 400th episode, we've been asking for call-ins and for people to send in call-ins about the show or whatever you want to say about the milestone of 400 episodes. And we've gotten like 6 or 7 so far, and some really, really good ones. And people really put some time into some of them. And one of the themes that's come up on some of these call-ins, Andre, is something about you falling asleep. So I'm just saying, be prepared for that on the 400th episode. There's some polite, barbs coming your way. So just
I would expect nothing less from our fine listeners.
And when, so far,
when you give the people ammunition.
right. Well, and the good thing about it was we actually asked for people not to, call in and just shower praise on us. And I think they took that to heart.
Where would the fun in that be? Right? Here in Negative Positives Land, we know that, affection is shown by gentle ribbing.
And they did it. They did it in flying colors, but some really good call-ins we've gotten for that episode. And I have a bunch of other call-ins. I don't know how many we'll get to tonight. And I got a bunch of emails. So there's a ton of listener interaction. I'm going to try to get in as much of it here as I can, as long as I can stand to sit in this really hard-ass stool that I sit in to record this show on this really bad back. But, man, I'm really starting to – I'm falling apart, folks. I'm there's no question I'm getting owed. And
Well, hey, Mike, I can say from personal experience that laying down on the floor of the Gutter Man Cave is actually very comfortable. Now, it may be a little colder than when I was there.
Well, so, maybe the coat is what I need, because I was thinking –
A big flat ice pack right on the top of your back. That's right.
See, I've been applying heat. I've been using like a heating pad and all this. And maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. Maybe I'm supposed to be icing this damn thing. I don't know. Because, you know, with injuries, you never know which one you're supposed to do, heat or coat or whatever. I know the heat feels good. But I've been slathering myself, anointing myself in this stuff called Biofreeze. And I don't know if you've ever used Biofreeze. It's amazing. It is good stuff. I gotta give it that. And
hey, I'm just saying, wash your hands very, very well, because right? You might touch other things that you don't want the Biofreeze to be on.
Well, I don't know, man. You know, I like my menthol powered soap, so I'm used to a little tingle in my dingle. So,
Mike, I was talking about rubbing your eyes. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Well, I get my last name, honestly, man. It's not gonna get out of the gutter anytime soon. But all right, well, I think it is the first segment, so I guess we'll start it. We'll find out what we've been up to. And I think I've just told a little bit about what I've been up to, nursing a back. But let's find out what Mr. Andre's got. Big news. He's been a man about. He's been a real rambling man here in the last little bit. So, Andre, what you got going on, man?
Well, while Mike's been getting old, I've been fulfilling one of my childhood dreams. And I just got back from about 9-10 day trip to Rochester with part of the Cinestill crew, the Cinestill production crew, Brandon and Brian, the founders, and Dan, who's, he does a lot of things. He wears many hats, but one of them is actually, you know, Remjet stripping. So for those who don't know, every few months, Brandon, Brian, and Dan head out to Rochester to run a production run, which is essentially when we use the much larger version of the machine that the twins originally built here at the office in Hollywood, to strip the Remjet layer from very, very large, essentially these humongous spools of film that are like thousands of feet long. And that's kind of how, you know, most Cinestill film is made these days. You can hear more about it on the episode that they recorded for the Kodakery podcast, which, you know, another little bit of kind of fun Cinestill trivia. One of the co-hosts of that now defunct podcast was none other than Steve Carter, who at the time worked for Kodak in the marketing department, and now, several years later, is the head of marketing for Cinestill. So it all comes full circle. Yeah,
I used to listen to that podcast. Okay,
yeah, I remember listening to it and really, really enjoyed it. There were some, like, you know, very specific motion picture and like filmmaking things that I kind of
skipped over.
Yeah, skipped over a little bit. sorry, folks. My main reason for kind of being out there was to have a few meetings with some cool people, some cool cats out there. One of whom was Nick Brandreth, the historical processes curator at the George Eastman Museum, who was my co-instructor for the now two different kind of classes, I guess you could call them, class of fall 2022 and spring 2022 and fall 2022. I can't remember. time isn't real. to kind of plan out what, you know, next year was going to look like in terms of educational content. It's not 100% set in stone, but we're hoping to do an in-person class together there at the Eastman Museum in about August or September. So I'll be heading out there to teach an in-person, my first in-person class, which will be very cool.
Professor Andre, hey, I can let you borrow my peacoat if
I was going to say, like, before I head out there. I mean, not that I'm really going to need it in August or September, but, you know, I can't be a proper bona fide in-person instructor without a peacoat. So, but no, it was great to finally meet Nick in person. He's such a nice guy, and, you know, showed us around the archives there in the George Eastman Museum. Just warehouses and warehouses full of, you know, amazing camera specimens. Is that what you call them? Exhibits?
Examples? Maybe?
Examples. I don't know. Like I saw and was able to handle the first Kodak camera.
Wow.
The motion picture cameras that shot The Wizard of Oz, like just some crazy stuff. Some gold Leicas, like it was nuts.
Wow, I mean, they just let anybody off the street touch these things, or is this a some kind of VIP status? You know?
Not anybody off the street. You gotta be a VIP.
okay, all right.
Oh gosh, that makes me cringe just saying it. Another really, really awesome person that I got a chance to meet was Fred Knopf over at Eastman Kodak, who was one of the engineers who developed the new Ektachrome.
Very cool.
We looked at some, you know, kind of test examples that they did. He provided us with some control strips for us to, you know, use for, you know, QC testing our CS6 chemistry and, you know, helping me kind of diagnose and troubleshoot issues that customers have with regards to temperature control. It was a great kind of like sharing of ideas. He comes from such like, you know, a long, long history of, you know, quality control there at Eastman Kodak, and to be able to, you know, have him as a resource to help with this kind of stuff and translate his knowledge on like the large scale motion picture side to, you know, at home E6 processing is really, really cool. And then other than that, it was mainly just kind of me working with Steve in the office or working at the Airbnb remotely with my team, dealing with the kind of like overflow, you know, ticket volume from Black Friday and the launch of our CS Lite digital camera scanning light source. And then just eating a lot of really amazing food and great cocktails in the surprisingly foodie city of Rochester.
Well, it gets pretty cold there. There's got to be some comfort food going on, man. You know, so
there was definitely some comfort food. I did partake in the you know, famous Rochester garbage plate. But you know, on the other side of the spectrum, one of the beautiful things about Rochester, if you've never gotten a chance to visit, is that you can eat some like pretty swanky food that, at least here in LA, would cost like 4 or 5 times the price. So we ate very well for like a very reasonable amount of money.
Nice. What is this garbage plate? For those
who don't know. A garbage plate. Let me look up because it deserves a proper what's it called?
Explanation.
So a garbage plate is, you know, typically potatoes, macaroni, salad, ground beef, hamburger patties. There's just like, it can be just an ungodly amount of food. Oh, ketchup and mustard nestled lovingly in. Yeah, here we go. 2 bunless cheeseburger patties slathered in a mysterious oily meat sauce topped with raw onions, ketchup and mustard nestled lovingly on top of a pile of home fries and macaroni salad.
Sounds
really,
okay.
You know, you really get rid of some haute cuisine.
You gotta get rid of those onions though, man. Onions are the devil's fruit. So
but man, it went like we kept forgetting to make sure that we were going to get a garbage plate, and on the like penultimate day, I think we had ended up at like one of the like dive bars watching one of the World Cup games. And then, you know, somebody's just like, wait, we're going to miss it. We need to go get a garbage plate before they close because we're traveling tomorrow. We can't have come to Rochester and not gotten a garbage plate.
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to be on a have to travel the day after that, man. It could be an exciting trip.
Surprisingly, I felt fine. I thought it was going to destroy me, but no, it passed through very cleanly.
That's good to know.
But yeah, no, I really, really enjoyed Rochester, and I hope that there are opportunities for me to head out there on a more frequent basis, because it's great to kind of get a, you know, like I developed a much deeper appreciation for the side of or one of the sides of the business that I never really get to see. I mean, I've seen and I've participated in, you know, some of our backroom production with the small 35 millimeter machine that the twins originally built for a good chunk of time there at the beginning of my time with CineStill. You know, all batches had been kind of loaded by me. So, you know, most of the CineStill 35 800T sold in the US for a time had gone through my hands in some capacity. Nowadays, like, I'm not really involved in production in any way. So having kind of been disconnected from that side of things and seeing now like how it's scaled was really, really impressive. And, you know, definitely kind of puts into context the frustrations that I have with, like, you know, more difficult communication when they're out there, you know, 3 hours ahead, spending most of the day in the dark, you know, sweating their asses off in their like denim coveralls and ear pro safety goggles, infrared goggles. Like, it's a lot. definitely respect and appreciate my coworkers quite a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like we talked a little bit last night about this trip on a little personal phone call, but I think I asked you this last night, but you know, the fine folks I'm sure might be thinking the same thing. But well, the first thing that I think about when I hear your discussion of this travel is, and it's something that I think I've noticed over that's changed since maybe we first started, since we first started talking and you got on at CineStill or whatever, but it seems like that Kodak is working, or Eastman Kodak is working with you all a whole lot more, voluntarily than maybe they did in the past. Like, they used to just sell you film, right? But it seems like they're actually collaborating with you a little bit more. Would you say that's a fair assumption?
Oh yeah. I mean, we used to buy film from Real Good, which was just a retailer here in LA. You know, these days we purchase directly from Eastman Kodak. You know, we give them demand projections so that they know how much film we are going to be consuming per quarter, per year. You know, we're built into their planning projections in terms of coatings. The room that we, you know, do the remjet stripping there in Rochester is a room there at Eastman Business Park that we lease from them. Like, the relationship has grown tremendously over the past few years, and, you know, Eastman Kodak is very much, you know, a partner with us, and it's not something that, like, I think I remember, you know, talking to you like several years ago about being concerned, I mean, even for my own like job security of you know, could the rug be pulled out from under us type of thing. But it's a really, really great partnership between us and them. And we've got some fantastic cheerleaders over there at Kodak that are rooting for us and supporting us and, you know, advocating for our continued growth. So
awesome.
It's a great thing to have, you know, allies over there at Kodak.
That's very good. Another thing that I mentioned, you know, you did talk to some Kodak people, obviously, and I think I asked you this last night, but the one of the things I was kind of wondering is do they seem to be thrilled or enthused by this sort of a demand for film right now, you know? And I think that I'd asked you if you saw any of the production lines or whatever, but, and you had told me, and I'm sure we probably said this on the show at one point, but it apparently that the biggest problem, the problem is not coding enough film. The problem is the packaging or the finishing, putting it into the cartridges and boxing it up is where the bottleneck is, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, at least on Kodak side, I feel like that would be an accurate kind of description of things. I did get a chance to kind of peek at some of the steps in the finishing process while walking through Eastman Business Park, which was kind of exciting to see, you know, little little boxes of 35 millimeter film traveling along a conveyor belt, the big sheets of metal that then get formed into cassettes. Like, it was really cool to see some of that, you know, going on as we're like walking down the halls. And they were running the whole time we were there, you know. They've you know, increased the number of shifts. Like, they're working their butts off. We didn't get it, or at least I didn't get a chance to kind of sit down with anybody in you know, on the production side of things in that way. But I can only imagine that they are trying their best to, you know, figure out a way, whether it's refurbishing old machinery or acquiring new machinery to increase their finishing capacity. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, nobody's able to meet demand right now. Like, the industry-wide and across all manufacturers. So,
well, same thing's going on in the auto industry. So
There's money being, you know, left on the table. So, whoever can vastly increase production capacity to help meet demand is going to be a very happy camper.
Yep. All right. Well, very cool, man. Like, you, anything else you wanted to talk about with that?
No, not particularly. I mean, I think I only shot like one roll of film. Well, one and a half, because I didn't finish what was in the Olympus XA. But, you know, it was cold while we were there. It was a little kind of gray and dreary. Took some pictures of some houses and, you know, kind of walking around exploring the city one day. A few silly little pictures with the XA at bars and restaurants, which I'm excited to see. But yeah, for the most part, just happy that we went, happy to be back home, and just getting back into the swing of things.
I hear you. Well, as far as me, I really haven't done any shooting. I'll be honest with you, this back issue didn't just develop overnight. It's been kind of building up over the last couple of weeks, and I've pretty much felt like a train has hit me every day I've woke up for the last couple of weeks, and then it just and then the train did hit me. So now it's really bad, but it's been a little bit difficult to move around here the last couple of weeks. So I haven't done anything, but I have received some cool stuff in the mail that I need to talk about. First thing is from Mr. Bob St. Cyr, who does the podcast, Follow the Light Analog Photography Podcast. And you should check that out if you haven't already. He sent me some really nice prints and a nice letter here. He says, hello, Mike. As your 400th podcast episode is approaching, I just wanted to congratulate you and your team on this podcasting milestone. I've included a few images. Blessing to you and your family. Sincerely, Bob St. Cyr. And Bob has also told me that he would like to help us with the Silver Linings project again this year. If we need any additional prints, he said he would love to help us again, like he did last year on that project. So so folks, again, the Silver Linings, if you donate anything to cancer research or cancer charities, send us an email letting us know that you did that, and one of us will send you a print. That's kind of what we're doing this year. Well, and anybody, the deadline for that is the end of this month, the end of the year, basically. So we've got a couple people that have donated, and we will get prints out to those fine people. But let's see here. But these prints, beautiful. A couple of, I'd say 8.5 by 11 here. Or maybe eight, I guess they're 8 by 10s because they're darkroom prints. Just a beautiful one here of Golden Ears Park, beautiful lake shot with a rock in the foreground and some mountains in the background. And here's one of a stream here with this kind of a motion blur thing with the stream going over the rocks here, and a little like a creek basically. And then there's a pinhole photo of the historic hydro powerhouse transformer. Really nice shot of a power transformer, like a bunch of electrical lines in the sky, but a nice pinhole shot here. Everything's really in sharp and in focus. Not sure what kind of pinhole camera he's using there, but it's probably a little higher quality than my Hoga pinhole. So, but and then we have a little postcard he sent me as well. That's says summer 2021, and I will not get this. This town, right? But it's from Saskatchewan. It says echoes on the postcard. It says echoes along the, and I'm not going to get this name right either, Natuku? I don't know. I'm sure I butchered that.
A for effort.
That's right. That's right. And also got another print in the mail from Mr. Billy Sanford from the Music and Photography Podcast. He just recently put out an episode with none other than Jess Hobbs from Classic Camera Revival and her YouTube channel. And actually, Jess has been on the show several times, both as a guest and a Cocoa Captain. But so check out Music and Photography with Jess Hobbs. It just came out, I believe, this week. But so Mr. Billy Sanford sends me a nice little note here. It says, "Hello, Mike. Releasing your music on cassette has been a really cool project to follow along with, but as much as anything, I've really enjoyed how making your music available in a way that people can physically interact with has added another layer of excitement to the process for you. Thanks for all that you do, Billy." And this is really cool. Billy sent me this print, and basically Billy bought one of my cassettes from me off my Bandcamp page. And then so he takes a photo of my cassette on a table and the case of the cassette on the table, and sends me a black and white print of that very tape that he bought from me. So how cool is that? Just what a thoughtful thing to send in the mail, man. So thank you, Mr. Billy Sanford from the Music and Photography Podcast. Yeah, just such a good dude, man. Like Billy's a real asset to the community for sure. So I think that's – well, I did get a zine. But there's an email that's attached to the scene, so I'll get to it when I get to the emails. So, I think that's pretty much all I got right now. So I guess how about we take a break, Andre, and we'll get back and read some emails and maybe get a call in or something. So, sound good?
Sure thing.
All right, well, we'll take a break and be right back, folks. Folks, we're back from the break, and I want to get to some listener emails. It's funny, I think I was griping behind the scenes to my co-captains that we don't give her any emails, and then suddenly I get flooded with some. So, you know, yeah, you get what you ask for, I guess. But first one comes from Mr. Patrick Lynch, and it's titled Book. He says, "Hello, all from New Hampshire land. Long-time listener, member of the Negative Positives group and the hotly frequented Negative Positives Music subgroup." Yeah, we have a music Facebook group as well, folks. And it's a very small but yeah, passionate group over there. and he continues, "That's a joke for everyone not in there." Yeah, it can be kind of dead sometimes. But I wrote a book called Shooting Film is Stupid. And would love to send you all a copy. Last I checked, there was a P.O. box for Mike. I'd love to send one to others as well, if possible. Anywho, thanks, Pat. So Patrick Lynch wants to send us his photo book. So what do you think about that, Andre? Very nice, right?
I think that is pretty cool. I'm definitely intrigued by the clickbaity title. So I want to see, you know, what he's got.
Yeah, yeah. So Patrick, I'll send you. I'll respond to the email here and get you some addresses. And you can send one to whoever, whichever one of us you feel deem worthy. So I'm not sure if anybody has a PO box, but
no, but that is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With regards to the Negative Positives Music group, you know, it's about quality. It's not about quantity. There may not be many posts there, but I've discovered some awesome music there.
Right.
Definitely not discovering good music on the radio. So,
right, yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the next email. It comes from. I'm kind of going through my email here. Make sure I don't miss anybody because I think I've missed some people in the past. All right, let's go with Daniel Smith. And here we go. He says, the title is Wide Angle on TLR. He says, "Hey, Mike, regarding Andre's desire for a wide angle auxiliary lens, these definitely exist. I've seen them for Yashica TLRs or Yashica, and I would imagine Rolly made them too. But the Holy Grail TLR, if you desire the ability to switch focal lengths, in my opinion, is the Mamiya C330, which has seven different lenses available for it, 55, 65, 80, 105, 135, 180, and 250. Great podcast, Dan Smith. And he's on Instagram at Corvus Press, C-O-R-V-U-S Press, P-R-E-S-S. Well, thank you, Daniel. This is more up your alley. Andre, you can answer this one. This is out of my ball game. So,
well, I'm like about 95 to 98% sure that we've already read this on the podcast.
Really? I don't think so. I feel like because I was going to read it because I knew it was more directed to you, and or maybe we read it and you weren't. Anyhow, answer it again, I guess.
No. I think I definitely need to go in and do some research, because surely if Roloflex made close up filters, for sure they must have made something wide angle. But I totally agree that the Mamiya, well, just the Mamiya C series in general. I think they started with the C3s, and then there's the C33, the C330, the C220s. They're much bigger and bulkier than the Roloflexes. They have like a bellows focusing system, which allows them to, you know, naturally focus closer than the Roloflexes without the use of without having to rely on close-up filters. Some of the models have like a little needle that, you know, once you extend the bellows far enough, that needle kind of, you know, drops into the field of view on the focusing screen. And it's actually cool because it accomplishes two things. One is like an indicator of the parallax error, and then it also corresponds to some like little markings on the focusing screen that gives you your bellows extension compensation. So super cool cameras, interchangeable lenses, which, you know, I don't know of any other kind of family of TLRs that allows for interchangeable lenses. They're just so big. I didn't have my what's it called? My Mamiya RB67, which is kind of my system do it all camera, you know, 6.45, 6x6, Instax Square, 6x7. I would definitely consider picking up a C330. But given that I have a Roloflex and a RB67, I've kind of got my bases covered there. But absolutely, I will be looking and doing some research to see if there were any wide angle lens adapters, because I would love to have a little bit more flexibility with my fixed lens camera.
Yeah, and you know, with the Mamma Mamiya not being necessarily your thing, I mean, you're just not really used to having big things in your hands. So, you know.
Right? Hey, the Mamiya RB67 is even bigger. This thing is a tank.
All right, our next email comes from Mr. Mark Fole. And he says, two items in 397. Hi, Mike and co-captains. I was listening to episode 397 and two things caught my attention. First of all, you were telling about how you wasted a lot of money early in your photographic careers. I can certainly relate to that. But I've heard a couple of times, most recently from Lena Bessanova, that your first 10,000 photos are your worst. They may be, but they are very important to the development of your own personal style. Looking back on my own stuff, there are a few keepers and a lot of junk. But I think all that junk led me to the right direction, led me in the right direction. And second, I think it was Mike Kukubica, who said he didn't like the 6x9 format and medium format cameras. That's the same aspect ratio as 35 millimeter film. 24x36mm and 6x9cm are both 2/3. Personally, I would love to have one of those Texas Leicas, but I don't need any more toys. I barely have time to play with the toys that I have. But I'm still staying positive and shooting some cool film photos. Mark Fole, cheers. Well, thank you, Mark. I think I'm at this point, I'm questioning whether I've taken 10,000 photos yet. I'm sure I have, but it was because I have been at this a long time. But I don't know, man. I feel like I'm probably gonna have to start all over. Like I'm probably reset now. I've got to take another 10,000 crap photos before I get good again. So
I mean, I've definitely taken some pretty long hiatuses where it's like, oh, I kind of forgot everything that I knew.
Right.
And definitely within those like first 700 rolls or whatever I landed on the last time that I was working on my scanning project, which has been months. I definitely noticed that there were kind of periods of time when I was into certain kinds of photography that I'm not into anymore, that I kind of beat myself up for like having quote unquote wasted so much film doing that. But to an extent, I do agree, because nowadays when I look at the things that I actually enjoy shooting and that I'm somewhat kind of sort of good at, and that actually makes me, like, you know, thankful that I took those pictures, they're just, you know, candids of people that I care about. Like, sometimes the composition's not great, sometimes the exposure's slightly off, but, like, if it's a cool moment with, like, somebody that I care about, that's the most important thing for me. And yeah, it took a long time for me to understand that, you know, both in the short term and the long term, whether I just keep them to myself and don't show them to anybody, or I end up making, you know, prints or end up scanning them, those mean more to me than any of the kind of artsy fartsy stuff that I try, which has, you know, at this point made it so that I do shoot less of the artsy fartsy stuff and more of the kind of meaningful, you know, little candids. So
sure. I think that's really all I've done probably this year. There's been a couple of times I've been out doing artsy fartsy stuff, but the little photography I've done this year has been mostly, you know, family shots. I would assume, like, the, some snapshots and some portraits and stuff. But yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. But
yeah, I mean, I'm going to Florida for the holidays, not this coming Wednesday, but the following Wednesday. And I mean, I think my parents want to go and do a couple of little day trips in which I might take some snapshots, but pretty much, like, I told them, like, hey, I'm still going to be working for a good chunk of the holiday season. Like, I'll need to stay home and be on my computer and stuff. I kind of just want to have a camera, you know, next to me while I work. And when I see them doing, like, silly domestic things that make me laugh, just snap a picture. I mean, that's what I did the last time that I visited them, back in, when was it, May, June, something like that. And I love those pictures. Like, those were some of my favorite pictures that I've taken in a while. Like, my dad barbecuing, my mom, like, prepping food, going back a few more years, like, come to mind, there were some pictures of my mom kind of, like, you know, sewing and, like, hemming my pants that, like, are some of my favorite pictures that I've taken of her.
Yeah, fixing where you blew out the crotch of your pants.
No, it's where I have to reconcile the Brazilian badonka donk in the waist with the fact that I've got, like, that I've got like little, you know, penguin legs. So everything needs to get shortened.
Well, let's get to our next email. This one comes, it came from someone called Roadrunner. I had to go back through my emails with him and find out his name is actually Stephen. I hope I get your last name right here. It's Schable, S-C-H-A-I-B-L-E. I think I might have got that right. Schable. Stephen Schable. Hopefully I didn't butcher your last name. But anyway, the email comes from Roadrunner, so we'll just call him Roadrunner at this point. But but Stephen says, thank you. He says, hi, Mike. I hope you and your family are well. This is totally random, but I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I thought you'd appreciate it. Maybe you're already aware of it, but if not, the podcast is called Broken Record. It's hosted by Rick Rubin and a few others. They interview musical artists, so I'm sure there may be several episodes of interest. However, the one I recommend is episode 42, John Frusciante. I think I got his name right. Returns, part two. He's the guitarist for Red Hot Chili Peppers. Frusciante. Probably butchering that. Part one, episode 38, and a few earlier ones with John and Anthony Kiedis are also very good if you like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But the reason I suggest episode 42 is John discussing and playing some interesting things on guitar that you might appreciate as a musician and a guitarist. Anyway, happy holidays, Stephen. Well, thank you for the recommendation, Stephen. I am not a huge Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. I don't dislike them, but I would listen to something if it's interesting. And I need to check out this podcast. It might be some other musicians interviewed there that I may like even more than Red Hot Chili Peppers. So, but thanks for the recommendation there. So, have you ever heard of that podcast, Andre?
I have not, but I'm familiar with the name Rick Rubin. I know that he's, you know, produced a lot of, you know, important things. But if you were say, like, who is, you know, Rick Rubin famous for producing, I would not be able to tell you.
I think he did Gosh, I think he's been all over. I think he did a lot of the classic hip hop albums and then rock albums as well. So he's kind of like very, yeah. I know he's done a lot of great albums, and I something should come to the tip of my tongue right now, but I don't want to say one and be wrong, but I do know he did some good ones. So it's cool that he has a podcast. Might have to check that out. So. All right, next one comes from Mr. Bill Two, and let's see here. Says, "Hi, Mike. It was great chatting with you on Messenger, and as promised, I'm sending you a copy of the new Analog Nights zine, Volume 3. Once again, I had a wonderful opportunity to edit the publication, which has images from 6 talented film photographers and their night photos. Once again, I'm blown away with how great these photographers are. I hope you enjoy the zine. The artists are Adrian from Melbourne, Australia, Christopher from the Philippines, Courtney from New York City, Mustafa from, Andre, you have me out here, Bahrain, is that right?
Yep.
Nice, got it. Ruya from Germany, and Seb from San Francisco. Please give them a follow. He gave me all their Instagram accounts. And he says, I'm now joined on the Analog Nights account by Alice and Esther, and hope you can all give them a follow too. We'll be hoping to produce a fourth zine in the coming year. Last but not least, it's a season's greetings also from all of us at the Pixels and Grain Collective: Alan, Chris, Adam, Will, Adrian, Vince, Chang, Matthew Joseph, Matt Jones, and Theo. Love and peace, Bill Two." And he sends me a digital copy of the zine. And maybe I can put a link to this so people can check it out. I'm guessing he wants people to be able to just check it out for free, the digital copy. Maybe I should check about that with Bill. But he did send me the zine, Analog Nights Volume 3. And it is beautiful. Me and my wife both thoroughly enjoyed this. Some beautiful night photography. And all color. And looks to me like, let me see, is there any black and white in here? No, it looks like it's all color film. Except for maybe the last page is a black and white photo. But it looks like, just from the looks here, Andre, you'd be happy to see, or at least by the halation here I'm seeing, it must be a lot of Cinestill shot in these. Yeah, there's some people shot some Kodak Portra. Here's Cinestill 800T, Cinestill 800T, Lomography CN800, Kodak Color Plus.
Those Aussies definitely love their Cinestill film.
So beautiful zine, Analog Nights Volume 3. Definitely try to get yourself a copy of this. I'm sure you can reach out to Mr. Bill too, on how to get a copy of it. And he didn't give me a link here, but I believe it's available through, I can't remember who he sent it through. It came to me from a printing service, but maybe I'll try to, if I find out, I'll try to put it in the show notes where you can get a copy of it, or just reach out to Mr. Bill Two, who is, I believe, Bill Two on Instagram, T-H-O-O, and I'm sure he can direct you on how to get a copy or even download the digital file of it and check it out that way. So just beautiful, beautiful work. So congrats to all those photographers. And thanks to Bill for putting together such a fine collection, just kind of curating these photographers and putting out this kind of zine series that he's not even putting his photography in. He's just curating zines for other photographers. So how cool is that? So good job, Bill. And another one of the just really one of the great people in the film community, man. Just always a positive force in the community for sure. So Mr. Bill too. So thank you, Bill. Beautiful zine. All right, and then let's see, next one comes from Mr. Adrian Doyle. He titles it Silver Linings. Silver Linings donation. Last minute donation, as I've been wanting to send in a voice message, first thanking Andre for the last Silver Lining print, but it's been months and I still haven't. Ha ha. We are.
Savage.
We are an absolute mess just trying to manage the two little ones that I haven't taken a photo in months. Thanks for all the stories. I don't know how ye do it so consistently. Thank you, Adrian. And then he sent us his donation details where he donated to, looks like the St. Jude for cancer research and charity. So thank you, Adrian, and we have you on our list. Somebody, one of these fine folks, will send you a print as a thank you for being just an awesome human being. So all right, next up here, do we have any more? Let's see, make sure I don't miss anybody here. Okay, I got one that just came in not too long ago, a couple days ago, from Lance King. And he says, "Hi, guys. I'm fairly new to your podcast, having listened to just a few episodes so far. I heard about the show from Larry Effler, whom I met not long ago. He bought a lens off of me. I've been enjoying the podcast so far and look forward to hearing more. I've been back into shooting film since about 2010, and I've also been a long time a long time listener to the Film Photography Podcast. In one of the few episodes I've listened to so far, someone mentioned sending their SX-70 off for work. I have a copy that was actually serviced several years back, but it has an ongoing issue with overexposing images. I've done the usual dial down adjustment, but it's still wonky. Could I impose on your good graces to find out who it is that was mentioned on the show? I believe the outfit had the word tech in the name, but the rest escapes me. Thanks, Lance from Oak Ridge, Tennessee." And I got back with Lance, and I believe he was talking about Retrospect. And Mike Kukavica was bringing that up. Was you on that episode, Andre?
I believe so. If I wasn't, I know that Kooks and I have definitely talked about that, because every once in a while, whenever Kooks is in town and he pulls out his stupid SX-70, I get, you know, jealous, and I'm like, man, I shouldn't have sold mine. Maybe I should get another one. In a future episode, maybe after the holidays, since he kind of, you know, bought it for himself as a Christmas present, I think it would be a really fun idea for us to have a post-holidays episode where we talk about, like, what either we got as presents from, like, photography related presents from loved ones, or what you know, presents we bought for ourselves. I think that would be, and it doesn't have to be specifically photography. I know that you just bought a bass guitar, Mike. Yes. But I think that would be fun to talk about. And the way that I'm kind of connecting this to the SX-70 stuff is that Mike is now kind of comparing and contrasting his, I guess you could call it refurbished or serviced SX-70 that he sent off to Retrospect with the Mint SLR 670 that he just got, which has like a little time machine thing on it so that you can manually set your shutter speeds and you know, an upgraded meter and all that stuff. If you're an SX-70 fan, I think that whether it's on this kind of post-holidays, like, you know, gift reveal show, like what we bought ourselves, or just an episode in the not too distant future, I definitely want Mike to kind of comment on his experience with both the refurbished, you know, old model and the kind of new and improved, like, techno wizardry of the Mint
modded one. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're into SX-70, I'm going to get Mike to kind of dive into it.
Mm. Yeah, and Retrospect is spelled a little strange. It's R-E-T-R-O-S-P-E, I think, K-T. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah,
I think so.
And so it was funny on that episode. My son, when I was bringing him home from Thanksgiving, and he was talking about this website that had all these cool, like, cassette Walkman players, because he wants a cassette Walkman for Christmas, and they had cool headphones, and he started saying, "Oh, they got some cameras too, and there's look at this, there's an SX-70, all this stuff." And I was like, and then, like, literally the next episode we recorded, Kooks brings that up, and I was like, "I think that's the website my son was talking about," and sure enough, it was. So mm-hmm. Like, it was a small world, but yeah, apparently they do a lot of cool stuff with old analog things, even like repairing refurbishing cassette decks and stuff like that too. So if you're into that kind of thing, which I'm certainly kind of big into the cassette thing right now.
Just bought a boombox? Jeff Greenstein over.
Yes.
Yeah. I Dream of Cameras podcast.
He's got a big ass boombox. Yeah, it's awesome. He's kind of making me want a boombox now. Very cool. Jeff Greenstein, you're making me jealous, man. Like, not about all your cameras you talk about, but that boombox got me little pangs of jealousy going on there. So, all right, man. I think that's our emails. I do. I have a couple of shout outs I want to get out real quick. Kind of way behind on this. Classic Hammer Revival, episode 139. At the end of their episode, just put in one of my songs. It's a very, very cool. So thanks to all the gang over there at CCR for doing that. It was a kind of a nice little treat. It just kind of surprised me. It came out of the blue. Got Benjamin Crone, does a YouTube channel called Construction Syndrome. And he does interesting things where he basically uses some of my music and shows some of his art, photography or painting, while the music plays. And it's very, very interesting the way he does it. It's kind of a nice way to show your photography or your art or whatever. And of course, the fact that he uses my music, I think it elevates it a tad, you know. So, and speaking of podcasts, I haven't given this guy as many props as I should, but Henry over there at Tales from the Magic Box podcast, he uses my music regularly, almost every episode. So I got to thank you, Henry, man. And like you, it's always really a thrill to hear that. Also, Theo Panagopoulos with his Photo Thinking blogcast from photothinking.com. He's got a new episode out about the Panasonic Digicam. He's using my music. And then we have a couple of YouTube channels. Alex Lokes, he has a Canon EOS 3000 review on YouTube where he uses my music. And Mr. Jim Melcher, kind of a new channel. He does a thing where he's talking about Astrum FN64, which I think might be a who makes that film? I don't know. I can't remember now. He said in the video. Now I can't remember. But it's Astrum FN64 and light piping. Talking about the issue of light piping. Again, uses some of my music. Is light piping something that Cine still warns about? I feel like I've heard you talk about that.
Yep. The fact that we strip off the anti-halation layer in the manufacturing process makes CineStill films more, CineStill color films more susceptible to light piping. But light piping is something that can happen to any film.
Yeah.
The felt there and at the you know edge of the cassette is not 100% light proof, and you shouldn't just leave a cassette just sitting out there in the sunshine, because it can get past the felt and then hit the film, and then film acts as like a fiber optic and you essentially get these like vertical light leaks that start really, really dense where they begin and then progressively get less dense as it travels deeper into the roll of film.
Unless you're looking for that look, I guess, right? So you want to get that.
I mean, if you want to get like a high powered flashlight and shine it in the felt, go for it.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, I think that's the shout outs and emails. Got some call ins. I got a ton of call ins. I'm not going to be able to get to all of them, but I'll pick a select few here, maybe the people that have been waiting the longest. And we'll get a couple of those out in the next segment and wrap this sucker up. So we'll take us a little break. And we'll come back for one more segment. So we will be right back, folks. Final segment. I'm going to fit in like three call-ins. I think I got, let's see how many. I got about, let's see, one, two. Only got two more call-ins after this that get on the next episode. So we're getting a little low. And then I got a bunch of call-ins for the 400th episode. And I thank you guys, the people that have sent those in. That's really going to make the 400th episode a lot of fun. So, yeah, thanks to everybody that's done that. And you still have time. I'm not sure when the 400th episode will happen, but it'll be, sometime soon. But you probably got at least a couple weeks to get us a 400th episode call-in if you want to do that. Just send an audio file to negpositives@gmail.com, and I'll get it in on the 400th episode. So, or if you want to send any other call-in about anything else, I can put it in the queue to be on a future episode. So there you go. But anything in your film photography journey, it could be anything you want to talk about. So but on this one, we are going with our first call-in. It's going to come from Miss Sherry Christensen from the Embrace the Grain podcast, and she sends us one about dealing with photographic ruts. So something that, I don't know, you know anybody that deals with those, Andre?
Not at all. I don't know what you're talking about. Never had one of those.
No, me either. No. You know me, I'm always out there. I just shutter bugging, But let's see what Sherry has to say about her tips for photographic ruts.
Hey, everybody out there in negative positives land. I hope you are keeping well. This is Sherry Christensen calling in with a review. It's not really a review, though. It's more a few tips for when you get in that dreaded rut. Now, we all know exactly what I'm talking about. When you just don't feel like doing it. And myself, I'm kind of in that rut at the moment with developing again. But, yeah. So, for the developing thing, when I get in that rut, the thing that I do to get out of it is I make a date for myself. I'm going to develop my film on this day at this time. Just like making an appointment. So, yeah, basically I make an appointment to do it. And once I'm all done, it feels good. And it isn't really that hard or time-consuming. So I don't know why I do that to myself. Oh, well. Anyway, so what about shooting? What if you just get in that rut when you're shooting? Well, if you're 100% film shooter and you get in that rut, one thing you can do is just take a little time off. Don't shoot anything for a week or two. And then if that drags on and on and on and on, you get the point, right? Just go out. Take your camera with you. And you don't have to intend on taking any photos. Just go out. Go out for a walk somewhere. It doesn't have to be anywhere spectacular or a new place. Just go for a walk down the street. You never know, you might see something. Go to the park. Go jump in your vehicle and drive out of town and go for a walk down a country road. You never know what you'll find. So just get out and you don't have to shoot anything. Just take your camera with you. Then I also hear there is a new craze going around. You guessed it, it's the Digicam. We've all heard about these Digicams. You know, those older digital cameras that in the early 2000s, they were super expensive, small, like you got your picture instantly. You could see it. It was a big deal. I remember when we got ours. It was expensive, and I packed that thing everywhere. So I still have it, and it's a little Kodak. It's 5 megapixels, and I went and grabbed it out of the drawer and put a new set of batteries in it, and hey, guess what? The card was still in it from way back then. So I snapped a couple pictures with it, and you know what? That really helped. It just kind of gets you going, and you don't have to worry about putting another roll in another camera and not finishing it off for months and months. I've got a couple of those that I've got out here now, so it's sitting with the Digicam on the table, and I'll grab one or the other and snap a photo, snap whatever, usually of the grandkids goofing off and playing. Those are precious film photos to me, and the Digicam ones are fun too, especially if the oldest one wants to grab pictures too. He can operate that one. Another thing is play with some expired film. Now, it's hit or miss with those, what you're going to get, but if you're like me, you've got some of it in the fridge and it didn't cost hardly anything. So you can afford to be a little more cavalier with those shots and maybe risk crawling under a bridge to see what's under there. The funny story, last time I did that, I crawled under the bridge at the river and there was Elmo giving me the finger. And I did have expired film, and I had my Holga. And I had expired ektachrome in the Holga, and I cross-processed it. So that's another thing you can do to be creative and maybe try something new that you've never tried before is cross-processing. Or even the new Lamography turquoise is out, and then there's Lamography purple. Those are fun films. And there's also the Revelog and the double film, and there's all sorts of these experimental ones out there that you can give a go. Another thing is, what's always in your pocket when you leave the house? You get it. It's your phone. So play with the camera on there. There's tons of really cool apps that you can play with, and some of them are even pretty good film sim apps on there. Or just play with the native camera itself. It's pretty darn good these days, as well as the native editing software. It's also pretty darn good, and it's already there. Or another thing is, try instant photography. Oh goodness, I can't talk. I prefer Instax myself just because it's easier for me to obtain, and it is way less costly than the Polaroid, but I do shoot the odd Polaroid as well. So that's another thing you can try. Now, this is one I've done to myself too. I've just forced myself to go out. Sometimes I just don't have a lot of time. I may have 2 hours here or 2 hours there, and I will just force myself out, and I got to get it done, and I'll go shoot the roll. And when I'm done, I feel great. You know, some of them maybe aren't that great, but another thing is, it really forces me to look at what's in the scene. Now, what I mean by that is, instead of just glancing over, okay, that's a pretty sunrise or whatever, but look for the light, look for the composition, look for the clouds, how they play in the sky. It really forces you to pay attention to the detail. So those are my tips for getting out of a rut. I hope it's helpful. And everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. Bye.
Well, thank you, Sherry Christensen from the Embrace the Grain podcast for the tips on getting out of a rut. I think there's some good tips there. I mean, I wouldn't really know because, you know, me, I'm never in a rut, you know, or anything like that. But I have some instant film to shoot. I don't know why. I just haven't just kind of shot through that stuff. I need to use it up anyway because it's getting a little long in the tooth. I think, isn't that an expression? I don't know. But, mm-hmm. So I need to use that up. The Digicam thing, I actually have, like Sherry, I have an old Kodak Digicam. It's like an 8 megapixel. It's one of those super zooms, and I've used it back in several years ago. Used it for infrared photography quite a bit because all I had to do is put an infrared filter on the front of it, and it would just shoot in infrared. Very cool. It was actually a quite capable camera. But I need to get it back out and see if it's got any magic left in it, because one of the problems I have right now is I still have a ton of film to develop. And I think some of my chemicals are getting a little old. So I got to mix new chemicals and all that stuff. So it's kind of been kind of keeping me from having a day of developing. But I don't know. Andre, you any thoughts?
I mean, my rut's going to be ending very soon, in that I'm going to be going and visiting my parents. And I'm actually really excited to shoot. But I definitely feel her on the developing front. I'm probably up to about maybe 20 to 30 rolls of undeveloped film. And I do like the idea of just kind of like setting a date and, you know, I don't know, maybe getting inspired by Mike and Kooks as well, going and buying a bunch of beer and, you know, treating myself to some fine American Pilsner or many or several of those. And just sitting down and cranking them out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and also, I mean, I mean, I would crawl under a bridge to get a photo of Elmo giving me the finger, you know. all right. Well,
show us where the doll touched you.
Yikes. Well, we'll move on from that, I guess. Thank you, Sherry, for the call in. Next up is a call in from Alex Lokes. From the Classic Hammer Revival. This is kind of a, I've just realized that all three of my call-ins are from Canadians, from the land of Canada. So this is a little Canada takeover on these call-ins here. So we're going to get to Alex. Alex Lokes from the Classic Hammer Revival is going to be talking about some pyro developer that he checked out. So let's listen to what Alex has to say about this.
Hey there, folks from the Negative Positive Podcast land. Alex Lokes here, Classic Camera Revival, with a call-in review on my new favorite developer, and that is 510 Pyro. Now, if you've been around for a while, pyro-based developers is not a new thing within the photography community, but it's always been incredibly toxic and very much out there. Something that really only people who do large format and plate photography use, but I'm telling you that 510 Pyro makes pyro-based developers accessible to the everyman. So 510 Pyro was developed by Jay DeFair and today is manufactured by the amazing James Lane, a mad scientist in his own right, at Zone Imaging in the UK. This basically makes any film sing. You can use it in HP5, Tri-X, Kentmere 100, Kentmere 400, Fomapan 100, Delta 400, HP5, you name it, it develops it. It makes T-Max 400 absolutely sing. And the best part is that you can use it with a constant rotation, so a Jobo system, or if you are running a lab, you can use 510 Pyro if you are running a boutique film lab. It just is an amazing catch-all. And unlike previous versions of Pyro-based developers, it is only a single chemistry. Yes, you mix it, usually a 1-to-100 dilution. I absolutely love it, and the best part is that it is now available through Freestyle Photographic in California, or you can order it directly from Zone Imaging in the UK, and they have just cut their shipping rates to make it even more affordable. So if you've ever wanted a chance to try a pyro-based developer but have been afraid or think it's only for large format, this is your call. It is great for large format, medium format, and 35mm. It's accessible, and the best part is 510 Pyro is the least toxic version of a pyro-based developer out there today. James Lane has the science to back it, and if you ever have an hour to talk film chemistry, I highly recommend hitting him up. He's across Facebook. All right, that's it for me. Stay cool, guys.
Well, thank you so much, Alex, for a very informative thing about it. I've always, you know, heard, I think what everybody always hears about pyro is it's extremely toxic. But it sounds like this guy has developed one that is much more eco-friendly, I guess. So, again, I've never tried a pyro developer, but if there's someone I trust about developing and like their thoughts on it and how it does with certain films, it would be Mr. Alex Lokes. So if he says it makes all those films sing, in his words, then I would trust that Alex is very meticulous about about his developing and what developers go best with what films. He's like really, really good at that. Me, I just throw everything at HC110 and hope for the best. I don't know. Thoughts, Andre?
I am very excited to try it. The fact that I can just, you know, walk over to Freestyle on my lunch break and pick some up is definitely attractive. And, you know, Kooks is, you know, pretty well versed when it comes to different flavors of pyro, you know, and I use that term very loosely in that, like, you know, you should definitely not ingest it because it is very toxic. but, you know, knowing that this is the least toxic and it's just one chemical, I mean,
I don't know about you, Mike. It sounds like this is the working man's pyro developer.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I don't know. I'd have to try it to be able to give that stamp of approval on it. But like I said though, if it's coming from Alex, if he says it's making those films which look fantastic, I would trust that recommendation for sure. So, and the fact that it's available from Freestyle means that, you know, pretty easily obtainable now. So yeah, very, very cool.
And again, like I know that a lot of people have been, you know, sort of following the whole stuff with See No Promise and Kodak Professional, Kodak Moment stuff. There has been a softening, to put it lightly, and distrust, to put it more strongly, with regards to, you know, Kodak's chemical manufacturing. I won't get kind of too deep into the history of things, but the slow transition away from, you know, Kodak chemistry being made here in the US of A to, you know, mostly being manufactured in China is bothersome to a lot of people. So, you know, having something that's made in the UK could be a reason for some people to try it out. And, you know, as much as I love HC110, I've definitely been on the lookout for alternatives. And given that, you know, I mean, I can really only pay lip service to this because my actions have spoken much louder than my words in terms of my interest in darkroom printing the past couple of years. But I would like to be able to, you know, have darkroom printing be a very frequent part of my workflow. And, you know, staining developers such as, you know, the Pyro family are definitely something that are, you know, much lauded by darkroom printers because they help you maintain a lot of highlight detail and give you, you know, a lot of flexibility when it comes to darkroom printing and controlling contrast. So it's definitely something that I would like to try. I think I'm down to like the last quarter of a bottle of HC110 here at home. So once that goes out, I may give some 510 Pyro a try.
Yeah, and if he says it works well with T-Max, then it's got to be pretty good. T-Max is a very picky film. I've noticed that. I have known and heard from many people that T-Max can be a little picky about developers. I've always used it, and I've back in the day I did it with D76 quite a bit, which was maybe not the best for it. But and then there was their own T-Max developer. I used that for a couple of years, and then the last several years it's just been all HC110, which has been fine with T-Max. But I know it tends to be. But I don't do darkroom printing, but I know T-Max can tend to be a little bit more difficult of a film, a little pickier about developers. So if he says it makes it sing, this Pyro 510, then man, maybe that's a thing for the T-Max shooters out there. So, but yeah, well, we got one last call in from another Canuckian Canadian from the land of Canada. Also from the Classic Camera Revival. The Classic Camera Revival just taken over negative positives on the show. It's just an invasion from those guys. But I definitely appreciate it. This one comes from many frequent time call-in, and I always appreciate it, Mr. Bill Smith. And he is going to give us a review of I believe it's an Olympus. I forgot to write down what he's reviewing here. I think it's an Olympus camera, but you'll hear it. I don't need to tell you. Like, Bill's going to tell you all about it. So let's listen to Bill Smith from the Classic Camera Revival.
Hey guys, it's Bill Smith from the Classic Camera Revival with a new phone-in review. And today, we're going to talk about the Olympus OM4TI. But before we get to that, we got to talk a little bit about the OM4 and where it fits in the grand scheme of things, because both cameras are really, really similar. Olympus had two extremely capable manual focus cameras, the Olympus OM1 and OM2. Well, they revised it in the late 70s, so it became the OM1N and the OM2N. And they were great. And there were a lot of huge amount of fans out there in the film photography community. Well, 1983 rolls around, and it's the 1980s. Things are getting a lot more sophisticated with cameras, so Olympus discontinues the OM1N and the OM2N and replaces it with the OM3 and the OM4. We're just focusing on the OM4. Like the OM2N, it's an aperture priority with manual override. It, unlike the OM2N, it has one extra shutter speed, 1/2000th. It's got an LCD readout that's for the time, very out of science fiction. It even has a built-in hot shoe, which, Olympus finally got around and got that taken care of. It even has a built-in diopter for those of us with Gen X eyesight, as I like to call it. It is a weather-sealed body compared to the cameras it was replaced, but the OM4 had one Achilles heel. The electronics chewed through batteries. So to the point, if you have an OM4 and didn't have the revised circuitry, after you're done using it, you take the batteries out or you'll have a dead camera in no time. So the OM4 was only around for a few short years. So we're talking 1983 to 1987. In 1986, Olympus sees the error of their ways. So they released the Olympus OM4 Ti, which stands for titanium. So it's a titanium top, titanium bottom, an even stronger chassis, even more weather sealing. So it took all the great bits of the OM4, and of course they revised the electronics so you don't have the battery drain issue anymore. So Olympus continued making that camera all the way up to 2002, and it sort of came down to Olympus really didn't have anything in the product line, pipe in the 1990s to replace it. Olympus was a lot smaller than Nikon, Canon, Minolta, and Pentax, so they didn't have quite the same research and development budget. The OM4 Ti appealed to its fans. It's great, but in terms of going up against what Nikon was throwing out with the N90S, F90X, and Canon with its EOS autofocus, Olympus just didn't have an autofocus pro grade SLR. Both a good and bad thing for Olympus, but that's a subject for yet another, podcast review. What's it like to shoot with? Well, the Olympus OM4 Ti has multi-spot metering. So I can meter both in the highlights and the shadows and come up with a decent exposure. Now, in terms of usability, if you're using an Olympus OM2N, some of the ergonomics is different because they've moved the ISO dial to the left side with the rewind knob, and because on the other side you've got the spot programs. Of course, the shutter, it's the same, the shutter control is on the same spot on the lens mount. So it's not totally alien. It's a great camera. I wouldn't recommend it for a beginner because you'll get lost in it. There are potential challenges with, LCDs fading over time. I am thankful the example I own, I don't have that. It was like coming home because I used to have an OM4. I let it go years ago, and for some reason, I kind of missed it. So I, of course, got the Olympus OM4 Ti, which sort of continues on this sort of continuing theme of Bill's gear acquisition syndrome, focusing on cameras he lusted after over the years. And yes, it just turns out really good. So in the end, the OM4 Ti, if you're an Olympus shooter and you've got a pile of Olympus OM Zoiko glass, it might be a camera worth considering. I would highly recommend doing your due diligence and expect budget about $400 or $500 for a decent body. That's about the going rate. So anyway, it's Bill Smith from the Classic Camera Revival. Have a great day, and we'll talk soon.
Well, thank you so much, Bill, and all the Canadians that sent the call-ins. I appreciate this wave of call-ins from Canada, but you can take your wave of cold weather and keep it on up there because I'm tired of these these Canadian polar vortexes that they keep sending on down. So we don't want that, but you can keep the call-ins coming though. But I am not an Olympus guy. I am a Pentaxian, as we like to call ourselves. I think the Olympus people call themselves Olympusians. Olympians, maybe it's Olympians, but I don't think it's Olympusians, I would think, but that's how you, I don't know, but
Man, I want to like
Olympus, and I've used, you know, several of the cameras, including an OM4 Ti, and they are just really, really special cameras. Like, the form factor is great. Those big, huge viewfinders for someone like me who wears glasses are awesome. I always just felt that that, like, multi-spot metering feature of the OM4s was just more complicated than it needed to be. Like, if anything, I would rather just have, like, a spot meter on me so that I can make those decisions myself. Because you are kind of baked into, you know, if I'm remembering correctly, like, you are slightly baked into kind of how they have it set up there, where, like, you place your highlights in one section and then you place your shadows in another, and it kind of averages things out. I could definitely be, like, vastly oversimplifying it, but you can do everything that the OM4's, you know, metering system can do with just a spot meter. Mm-hmm. And that'll benefit you across other formats where the camera doesn't have that metering system built in. So if you learn how to use a spot meter, you can use it across any camera rather than just having that being tied to the functionality of the meter in that specific camera.
I can see the benefit of having it on camera, though, so you don't have to carry another thing around. You know, I can
that
see
is that true. Yeah. Typically, spot meters are pretty big, and I have not yet gotten a chance to try out the Riveni Labs spot meter that I'm pretty sure is probably one of the smallest spot meters that that exist. But it is such a cool camera.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would drop the money for it, not being, like, a huge, like, Olympus fanboy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I've always heard their glass is amazing. So if you're already invested in Olympus system, then that definitely might be a camera for you. It sounds like it's you know, very advanced for the time. So yeah, very cool. Well, thank you, Bill, for that, and keep those coming, man. Like, we always appreciate getting those guys over there at CCR. I don't know. I think I said that Camerosity podcast was the nerdiest of the film podcast.
CCR, give them a run for their money.
I think it's CCR. Could be. I mean, they're the OG camera nerds. So, you know, I think we're gonna let them fight it out. I think so. Canada versus America on who's the nerdiest film podcast. So there you go. You can email us and let us know which one you think is the nerdiest one, and we'll determine it for them. So so there you go. All right. Well, I think that's our Collins. I think we got enough listener interaction out. I made a dent in it anyway, so I feel good about it. And appreciate everybody that's the emails and the call-ins. It really does. For a while, we were getting we were in a little bit of a no man's land, like a little desert area of getting listener interaction. And then we found ourselves in the jungle, deep in the forest, all kinds of call-ins. So and interaction. So it's very, very cool. Very, very, very nice to get. So it makes me realize people actually do listen to this stupid ass show. So,
or at least we have a dedicated group of friends, most of whom are podcasters who take it on us.
Right. That's a good point.
Either way, I'll take it.
That's right. That's right. You know, we're not going to be picky. So, all right. Well, let's go ahead and run on out of here. Andre, where can people check you out?
People can check out my long dormant Instagram account at Andre on Film. Hopefully when I am back from the holidays visiting my family, I will be, you know, making a special date for myself to develop everything and get some scanning done with the new CineStill CS Lite light source, and hopefully posting to Instagram again. So I think we can I'll back myself into a corner by saying February we can start expecting me to post on Instagram again.
Nice. I like how you threw a little shameless plug in there. Very nice. Very nice. Good on you. So well, Sin is still a shameless plug, so that's good. It's good. You should do that. So
yep. Every once in a while, I remember too.
Right. All right. You can see my now long dormant Instagram account. photography at Gutterman Photo on Instagram. You can email us at negpositives@gmail.com. That's negpositives@gmail.com. You join our Facebook group, Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group, and also our music group. If you like music and you like to talk about bands or whatever, music gear or whatever, we have the Negative Positives Music Group. It's like a negative /positive symbol with actual symbols, and you'll find it. But there's a couple people over there. We mentioned it on the show. If you're interested in that, there's a couple of us. There's a few on that group. Let's see, and we have an Instagram account. It's Negative Positives. You can check us out there. Also, coffee. We have a coffee account where you can support this program. It is ko-fi.com/negativepositives. And we did get a coffee donation from Mr. Bill too, which we mentioned on the show with the email and the zine that he put out. So thanks to Bill for the coffee donation. As if he's not already one of the best people in the community, here he is supporting this program. So thank you, Mr. Bill too, for your coffee donation. So very much appreciated, sir. You are an awesome individual. So, and the last thing is, let's see, you can check out my music on Bandcamp. It is mikegutterman.bandcamp.com. All right, folks, the next episode, the big one, the 400th episode. Not sure when it's going to come out. It'll come out when it comes out. It's going to be when the holidays, weird scheduling and stuff. People are going to be out of town, visiting families, all that good stuff for the holidays. So whenever we can coordinate this and get everybody together to have a good old grand time and get Andre sufficiently lubricated with alcohol so he can have his love fest speech and all that. So we'll get all that coordinated, and it'll come out when it comes out. But I would say it's not going to be anytime in the next couple of weeks, probably. But probably, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll get that out, and that'll be the next episode. And then we'll gonna have a couple of little small changes to the podcast after that we've been discussing behind the scenes. So look forward to a couple little tweaks to the Negative Positives podcast coming in the new year. So, but there you go, folks. We will talk to you when we talk to you for the 400th episode. Until then, everybody stay positive
and shoot some cool film photos.
There it is, folks. Take care. And hey, if we don't talk to you before then, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that good stuff. I hope everybody has a fine Christmas season and gets the time, a good time to spend with loved ones, family, and friends, and just has a joyous holiday season. So there's that. Andre, would you like to tell people that too?
Yeah, just happy holidays. You know, spend it with people you love. Hopefully, take some, you know, some pictures. Even if they're just silly little candids at home, you know, you don't have to get too artsy fartsy. They may be your favorite pictures that you've taken in a while. At least, you know, I've found that that's the case with me.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, folks, take care. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And we will talk to you soon.
Hold on, folks. I forgot. I got to do a listener music track. It's a listener interaction episode. Got to do a listener music track. And I'm going to pull out our tradition. Since I'm not sure if we'll have another show before Christmas or not, we might. But if not, we got to pull out our tradition. And this is going to be from Mr. Minson Sours. He was a recent guest. And the last couple of Christmases, we've always played a track that he sent me several years ago called Hark the Joy. This is Minson playing some hot licks on the guitar, a little Christmas medley. So we will end the show with Minson Sours with Hark the Joy. Merry Christmas, everybody.
A Gutter Man Cave production!